Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm, welcoming you to the Yacht Racing Podcast, where my guest this time is Dutch offshore sailor Rosalind Kuyper. Rosie has just been announced as a member of Boris Herman's Team Malizia in Mocha 60 crew for the upcoming edition of the Ocean Race, which sets off around the world in January 2023. As you'll hear in the interview, Rosie has a fantastic backstory. Where lots of people dream of being a professional sailor and racing around the world, Rosie came up with a plan and went out on her own to make it happen. Well, Rosalind Kuyper, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast. Exciting news for you this week. So let me start by saying congratulations. You're going to be doing the Ocean Race, a race around the world. How excited are you right now about that?
Yeah, hello, Justin. Thank you very much for having me in your podcast. It's an honor on my side. Yeah, super excited. This week they announced it that I will still be part of the crew for around the world, and I'm super excited. Yeah,
so really. So you're going to be racing with Boris Herman, German skipper, which many of the podcast listeners will know from the last Vendée Globe race, and the team is Team Malizia.
Yes.
So tell us, how did this all come about? How did you get selected?
Well, actually, in January this year, the team director, Holly Kova, she sent me a text, and she said, "Hey, Rosie, someone dropped your name here. I think it's Bull Harris who did, because I sailed with him on ExxonMobil. He was a navigator on board, and he's part of this team for many years." So, she sent me a text, and she said, "Oh, we're interested for having you in the campaign for the Ocean Race, and maybe for after that as well. Would you be interested?" And I was in the bus, I guess, at that point. I was like, "Oh, yeah, that's interesting." I was like, "Is this a joke?" But no, so we kept in contact with a few calls, and in February we had first a training to get to know each other, for me to get to know the team and for them to see, you know, what was on my resume, if it was correct. And after the training, basically Friday we finished the training, and that day I flew to the Caribbean as well for the Caribbean 600. They offered me the contract, and I signed, and now we're here. I'm working for the team 2 months, it's super nice. Yeah.
that's so exciting. I'm amazed it just kind of came out of the blue for you, because we haven't actually met, but we kind of worked together a little bit on the Ocean Race, the Europe Ocean Race.
Exactly.
And we were both with AkzoNobel. But so I researched you a little bit then, because I was writing about you, and you strike me as a very driven individual. You've set your stall out to be a professional sailor a long time ago, and just pretty much went after it. A lot of people want to be professional sailors, but not a lot of people get to do it. So I'm interested in just kind of going back and talking a little bit about how this all began, because you're not very old yet, and you're about to do this amazing race. So where did it all begin? Where was the love affair with sailing? Where did that begin?
So for me, I started sailing when I was pretty young, when I was like 6 or 7 years old, on a local lake in Zoetermeer, my hometown. Actually, now optimist with my dog, because I always was a bit afraid of water, so I was very happy that he accompanied me.
What was your dog called?
Tucky, and so that was pretty nice. I went on the bike, and then I just prepared my little optimist, and then my mother came with the dog, and then we went sailing in the weekends and after school. But then from there, I always kept sailing, but I focused on different sports, athletics, and after that, hockey, field hockey. And actually, when I was 18, I told my parents, I want to go. And they said, "You want to go? What do you mean you want to go?" I said, "Yeah, I want to go traveling." But they said, "Okay, where do you want to go?" I said, "I'm going to Australia." I said, okay, but do you have money for that? And I said, yes, actually, I work and I have some money and I'm going. So, yeah, when I was 18, I traveled around the East Coast in Australia, and I noticed everywhere where I am, I'm just sitting days in harbors and watch the boats, watch the people. And I was interested in boats. And I found a job at the White Sundays as a deckhand on a yacht. And we went out sailing. And the first weekend we went out, I was like, whoa, man, this is sick. This is so cool. Yeah, and for me, it was like kind of a fire start burning like behind your chest, right? And I was like, whoa, this is next level. This is the most amazing thing I've ever done, and this is what I want to do. So then I went back to the Netherlands. I joined a sailing school, and after that I joined Team Heiner. So that's a youth academy for big boat sailing, led by Roy Heiner, actually. And he used to skipper in the Volvo Ocean Race.
Yeah, legendary Dutch skipper, yeah.
Yeah. And it was funny because I was too late with my application for the youth academy. But I knew if I want to continue sailing, if I want to do races, I want to get better in this, I need to get into this selection because this is my only way. So I called them and and they were like, oh, you know, stop pushing so much. But I just knew the selection was like in 2 days. So I knew I will show up anyway and they should send me away. So yeah, I could do that. And then it's funny because a trainer, he told me like a couple of weeks ago, he said, yeah, it was like they invited 15 people and the selection was with 30 or something. And they said, like, I was the last one and they couldn't decide because I had the less experience of everyone, but they said, okay, she is so driven and maybe we give her the chance to do it. So, yeah, I came in there and I started sailing there. And actually, after half a year, I was like, whoa, this is so sick and so cool. I want to do the ocean race.
At that stage, Rosie, had you done much racing, much dinghy racing, other than sailing with your dog in the Optimist?
No. So I did some small sailing, like in smaller boats now and then, just on the local lake, and but never really competitive. I wouldn't have loved to do it, but my parents said when I was younger, and I think fair enough, they said, listen, you have a brother and a sister who are really keen and driven in sports as well. We cannot go with you every weekend to sailing events. So I said, fair enough. So, you know, I choose a different direction. And sometimes my mother said, oh, but maybe we should have supported you more and you should have sailed more dinghies. But I said, no, because I'm super happy that it went like this, because when I was 18, I just knew this is for me magic, and I really knew this is what I want and this is not what my parents want me to do. So I think it was good that it happened like this.
So the experience of sailing in the Whitsundays, it can often seem glamorous, but it's quite hard work, isn't it, working on these boats? But yeah. you were just completely taken with the sailing aspect of it.
Yeah, I was a bit out of my mind. I sailed with a skipper and his dad. And even if we wanted to go anchoring just for the night, I said, no, let's go to the other island. And I sailed the whole night by myself. I was so stoked and I loved it. And they said, you're mental, little lady. But no, for me, it's fantastic. Yeah.
So back from there into the Roy Heiner youth program, and tell us a bit about that. What form did that take? What sort of boats were you sailing? And was that kind of a full-time thing or a weekends or what?
It was the weekend. So I think I did it 3 years, from my 19th until 21 or 2. And it was the weekends, but actually it was pretty intensive program, like 30 hours a week or 40 hours a week. And I did it beside my studies. So at that time it was full on studying, sailing, and going to the gym a lot. We sailed on different boats like J109s, Max 135, and some smaller boats. And basically the goal there was to become an all-round sailor. So in navigation, in all the positions on board, having a skipper role, all the engine, all the things you can think about. What's important for big boat sailing, you learn there. So I'm super thankful.
And I kind of feel like if you hadn't have made it into that group, I mean, you pushed so hard to get in, life might have been quite different, eh?
It would have been totally different. I would not have been where I am now, 100%.
Yeah. And did your siblings? Where do you sit in the age of the siblings? Are the youngest or the oldest?
Oh, I'm the middle.
Okay.
So I have a fantastic sister. She is 23. She's studying maritime engineering in Delft.
Okay.
And my brother, 29, he's running his own company, and everyone is pretty driven at home. So. Yeah, it's good.
And was there any sailing in the family prior to you taking a liking to it?
Yes, like when we were younger, my parents used to sail. When we were younger, we rent little boats and then went out on the lakes. And we sailed quite a bit. We never had like a family boat, but we, they loved it. And they still do. They love it.
So they've kind of been eclipsed by your activities, I guess. But when did you first kind of sit down and think, well, I want to make a career out of this. I want to be a professional sailor and get paid to go do this.
I was in the kitchen in my parents' place, and I played field hockey, then on a quite good level. And my mother was cooking, and I told my mother, that was before I joined Team Heiner. I said, yeah, mom, what do you think? I have a wild idea. And I always have like 1,000 wild ideas. And she said, okay, tell me. I said, yeah, do you think I can, I can get to the top of sailing? And she looked at me and she said, well, yeah, if you see it happening, I think, yes, of course you can. But I said, yeah, but there are so many people who are so far already and the Olympic things and... I had all excuses not to do it. And then she said, yes, but I really believe if you see it, how it will happen, and you believe in it, and you make a plan, you can. So, and then I said, okay. So I stopped the field hockey, joined in with Team Heiner. And when I left that academy, like after 2.5 years, and I finished my studies by then, I said, okay, I give myself 1 year from this day to this date to see if I can make it into professional sailing. And if I manage, I continue. And if I don't manage, then I go for another career.
You pull the plug. And just let me check, what was the studies that you were doing? Was that university or college at that point?
Yeah, I studied in the university, psychology.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I specialized in group dynamics and team performance.
Interesting choice. That must have come in useful over the years.
Yes, every day. Every day, yeah.
Okay, so at this point, you've set yourself a goal of a year. So what do you do next? What's the plan? You're sitting there in Holland, which is, with all due respect, is a well-respected ocean racing country, but there's not a lot of ocean racing going on in Holland.
No, not much. Actually, so I said it in August or something. Then I met very good friends, and they invited me for the Middle Sea Race on their boat, Australian friends, Sarah and John. And they flew me in. And I was like, oh, that's interesting that people want to fly you in for a race. So I was very excited to be there with them, an amazing Australian crew. And I told them my plan.
And what was the boat?
the boat called Tilting at Windmills, and it was a custom built 46.
Okay.
And Sarah and John Australian, and they had like a mixed of Australian, like amazing people. And I told them my story. I said, okay, you know, I'm free now. I graduated from my studies and I have 1 year and I want to make it into the sailing. And actually, I want to come to Australia for the Sinto Hobart. So, and I met two lovely people on the boat and they said, okay, so when are you planning to come to Australia? I said, I don't know yet, for the Sinto Hobart. And they said, okay, do you have a place to stay? So I said, no. They said, okay, you can stay at my place. They live in Sydney. So we sailed the race, and at the airport where we said goodbye, they said, okay, are you still planning to come? And then I said, yeah, I arrive at your place in 1 week. So they said, oh, okay, this is a surprise for us. You will be almost earlier than us. But no, so they provided me a home, and from there my journey started. And then I was there in Australia with a mission.
Right. So the mission was to get yourself a ride for the Sydney Hobart.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you arrived there in, because that's a Boxing Day race. So when did you arrive in Australia?
I arrived in Australia in November. So after the Middle Sea race. Because I was like, I need to give myself some time to get to know the scene. And I made a plan of the persons in charge and of the boat captains and the team managers. And I just knew, okay, these people are important. And I just made it a mission to get to know them. And then 99 times they say no. And I was lucky one time with Bradshaw Kellett. He was a boat captain on InfoTrack on a 100-foot racing boat, and he offered me a job as a shore team member. And 3 weeks later, the racing crew arrived with Tony Mudder. He skippered the boat by then, and they said, "Okay, we take Rosie just for training, cabbage tree race or something." And then after the training, he said, "Okay, you're in the team. We take you for the race." I was like, whoa, okay.
You're making it sound very simple. So I want to just kind of rewind a little bit here. You said 99 times out of 100 people would say no to you. That's pretty tough. And if I'm right, I think you were basically trawling around the marinas and the boatyards where you knew these boats were based or the teams were based. And
yes,
what did you do? You just fronted up and said, "Hi, I'm Rosalind Kuiper." And what?
Yes, exactly. I just introduced myself and I said, "Okay, literally what you say." And of course, I make it sound like it is easy now, but it by then it's not easy because you're like 21 years old and you're there by yourself in a country that you don't know and you don't know the scene. And and besides that, 99% of the people, they said, "Paul, girl, you're a very nice girl, but your mission is impossible.
Really?
So, you know, put it out of your head. It's not happening." So, yeah, then you feel a bit alone. And I'm always happy that I have fantastic family behind me who's always supporting. So, and the people I stayed with. And then along the way, you meet people who believe in it and who want to help you. So I think that made for me the difference. But of course, it's not easy to go on a mission like this in if you don't know, you know.
it just strikes me as incredibly brave to even think that you could do it, and then to actually, you know, just be there being told no. It's, you know, it's kind of like a scene from a movie almost. Were there times when you were, you know what, they're right, this is a crazy mission, I should just go back
always.
To the Netherlands?
In Australia, but as well just during the whole trip, always. And especially when you're a bit tired or you feel alone or you see your friends having weddings or babies got born or things, special things at home. Oh, then sometimes you think, where on earth? What am I doing? Why do I do this? I can just maybe take the easy way. Yeah, of course. But I think everyone with a mission has this. Hopefully.
So finally, you got a yes. And that's not a bad boat to get a yes from. Infotrax, a well-known boat around the world, big name boat in Australia. And you must have been rubbing shoulders with some top names on there, other than Tony, who's a pretty big name in himself. Who else was on that boat?
So we had Tony Mother, Bauer Becking, Stu Bennentine, Antonio Netti, Willy Attadil, Nick Dana, and Chris Nicholson, of course. And for
Chris
me,
Chris Nicholson as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me, why do you think they said, "Well, we're going to take Rosie training"? How would you approached the shore team job? Because I'm guessing that you were.
I just worked my ass off, just hanging out and work very hard, and you know, don't complain or don't say anything until you got asked something. Just work your ass off, and actually, I asked them. I said, you know, after everything, I said, okay, but why did you take me anyway for the work, and why did you take me on the race? And they said, because you were always there, always you always gave a hand to everyone, and you were just easy, you know. I wasn't there in the spotlight; I was just behind the scenes, giving everyone a hand where I could, and that made me learning so much, because I could work with the bowmen, I could work with the trimmers, with KP on the navigation. Like, I learned so much, and I was, I think, one of the only girls ever on that boat, and very young. We sailed with 24 by then, so everyone had a kind of a goodwill as well. They thought, okay, the lady, she's just working very hard and she doesn't know anything, so they teach me, and I learned a lot there.
Yeah, maybe using some of your psychology experience on some of these guys, huh?
Yeah, just a bit here and there. I've
met all of these people that you've talked about, and they're fearsome on their own. Never mind, put them all together on a boat. Where it's a pretty male testosterone fueled environment, and there's you dropped into the middle of it. Were you intimidated by that?
No, not really. Actually, for me, the beginning, yes, was difficult, because you're very young, and it was my first experience in like the big male sailing world, right? So yes, I felt intimidated in the beginning. And I find it hard in the beginning, and that took me some years to be able to feel okay like a woman, because of course you're different than a male, and if you work 1 month with 24 guys together, if you have a dinner, then you cannot wear a short skirt or something, right? So you don't want to have any wrong like thoughts.
Yeah.
So, and I found that quite difficult to find my way in it. You want to be relaxed with people, but you don't want, but these are your colleagues. You want to learn, but you don't want to create wrong expectations. So I really had problems to find my way there. But luckily I could share that with my family. And in the end, I just decided I'm just who I am. I just do my thing. My mission is to get on this boat, and after that to sail the ocean race, and the rest I just let it go. And they like me or not, but I'm just who I am. And that helped me a lot.
Yeah, I mean I guess you want to be one of the boys, but you don't want to be one of the boys.
That's
the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And for me it's a big relief now, because I found my way in it. And it's good. But I noticed I struggled a lot, like during that time, but the first years I struggled with it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by, I think your approach was great. And I've seen this in sailing teams, the work ethic gets noticed, whether it's a good work ethic or a bad work ethic. People think maybe it doesn't, but the people at the top of these teams, the leaders of these teams, they're looking for this all the time, is just how people approach any job, you know? And you know, sometimes having a smile on your face is another big thing as well, you know, just to be seen to be a positive individual in the team.
100%, yes.
So it worked for you. You get the nod to go on the training runs. But you were at that point, you were thinking, well, this is great to, you know, get this experience of sailing the boat. But were you then, all right, I've got this far, I need to get onto the boat for the race? Or was it a surprise when you got the nod to go racing with them?
No, of course, you're super keen, right? So I had it in the back of my mind, I'm here in the short team, but I better do everything that I can get on the racing team. So yeah, of course.
And were there other people in that short team who were angling for the same thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So how do you manage that dynamic when, you know, yes, you are a team, but you're also competing against people really for the opportunities?
Yes. I think to be always open, and I always have been honest. I've never been, you know, unclear. Or yes, of course, you work together and you're competing as well. The relationship, like, there was one other guy who was very keen to sail that race as well. And of course, for him, it was a disappointment he couldn't. But I've always been good with him. Like, we've always talked, and if he could go, I was happy for him, and that I could go, he was happy for me. So
yeah, I can understand that. I can imagine that scenario. So tell us about sailing 100-foot maxis. Very different to the Optimist. No room for the dog, I'm imagining.
no room for the dog. No, it was a big experience, of course. The loads are so big, and the sails are so heavy, and I was up in the mast often, and the mast like 55 meters high. I loved it there, actually, because it's so quiet and you can just do your own thing. And not so many impulses as on the boat. So, was just full on.
You have a head for heights then, if you've been up the rig?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Even, sometimes I just stay up there for a bit to just to have my little yoga moment, you know.
Yeah, that's a little strange, I've got to say. But I kind of understand it, but I have no head for height, so I can't really.
Maybe you have a head for depth.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. So I guess at that point you were just a giant sponge trying to absorb all of this information and experience.
Yeah.
From the guys, it's. Again, I don't want to labor the kind of male aspect of this whole thing, but, you know, these are professionals who are working when they're racing these boats, as much fun as their job can be.
Yeah.
Do they really have time to kind of mentor people?
Yes.
Okay.
And the lucky thing was the program was pretty big. We had a lot of people, and 100%. And we had everyone was there 1 month before the race started. So we had so many training days to work on the boat, and everyone. And it's kind of a culture as well. If you're the newbie in the team and you have goodwill, I see it in all the teams, then people are willing to learn the newbie something, like the nipper, they call it.
Yeah, the nipper. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely.
So the race itself, this was one of your goals, was to do the Sydney to Hobart race. It's a classic race.
Yeah.
Many, like I said at the beginning, many people have the goal of doing that race, me included, but not everybody gets to do it. And you kind of got to do it on your first go. So did you feel like, all right, well, yeah, I've kind of made it now. Like, I am a professional sailor.
Oh my God, no, not at all. No, I was like, this is a very lucky shot, and this is just this is a nice kickoff, but now the real work is starting. So no, not at all. No, that was a good start.
Tell me about the race itself. How did that go for you? Did that live up to expectations?
Yeah, I had no expectations at all. So yes, everything what happened was amazing, and no, it was good. It was a good race, but it's different dynamics, right? If you sail on a big boat with 24 people, everything is slower. You talk more, and the guys are so professional, so there are no fuck ups. So it was pretty kind of easy going.
Was it a windy year for you? A windy race for that race?
Yes, I think so. Well, a bit windy, but it was downwind most of the time. So, well, it was pretty good. Yeah, and we arrived in Tasmania, and my friends, they lived there. The ones I sailed with on Tilting at Windmills, they came out with the boat. So, no, it's super nice. Then you feel home.
So what next? What did you do at that point? Did you stay with that team for a little while after the race, or was it?
No, I flew back. I think, well, it's in 2018, so I don't know it exactly, but I flew back. And I think I went to the Caribbean. Yes, I went to the Caribbean for the 600. Then I did the Swan season, like the One Design Swan. And then it kind of started for me. Yeah. And then I got a job on a Cookson 50 that I could run, and I could put some like crew on, and I could take care of the boat. And then for me, it started, and I earned money, and I was like, whoa, this is super nice.
Did all of this, again, you're kind of making it sound like it just happened, one thing happened after the other, but this no. is, it. I'm guessing that now people, not that people knew your name, but you were part. You had a network of people who were aware of you. You could pick up the phone and call. Opportunities were coming up. Is that how it was?
No, actually, no. Like opportunities, no, did not just came up. Not at all. I made a plan. I made like a mind map of, okay, what do I need to become a good sailor? I made like a whole plan, and therefore I called my contacts, the ones I met on InfoTrack as well, just to have their opinion and to think along with me about how to, yeah, what to do, where to put your time in. But now it's not that they gave me a contact and say, okay, of course, here's another made up bet for you, go for it. Yeah. And, not at all. Yeah. It was very hard to find boats to sail on and jobs and things. And some people, they contact me and they ask me now, oh, okay, how did you do it? Or, do you have any advice? But you have to be on top of it yourself. And you have to really, yeah, it's not easy at all.
Yeah. So at that point, what was the goal for you then? Was it just to ramp up the experience as much as you could, and over the next few years?
Actually, my goal of that year was to sail the Rolex races on boats where I could learn the most, and for me, what my contacts then say was like on boats where you have good other people, like good professionals who can teach you things, or on like boats similar to the 65, because my goal is to sail the ocean race. So that was kind of my focus.
So the overall goal at this point was the ocean race. When did that start to factor in for you? Was it from the Roy Heiner Academy days?
Yeah, so half a year after I sailed there, I said, okay, I want to do this. I want to do the ocean race. Yeah. And then I just knew, I thought this is fantastic. And especially the offshore sailing, I noticed this is great.
So that was the goal in your head. Was that a goal you were sharing with other people?
No, that was not a goal. That was just a goal in my head. I was like, oh, this can be awesome. I think it started just before, after I finished the Roy Heiner Academy, then, or 1 year before I left, I shared it. So when I was 20 or something. And then I...
What was people's response to that?
Oh, good luck. Most of them said, nah. Like, a lot said, okay, it's a really nice goal. And of course, everyone wants to do the ocean race. And yeah, okay. 99% said, you know, super nice. But no, maybe try to get another goal, but you will be very disappointed.
And when you told yourself the goal, what was your inner voice? What did your inner voice say? Same as them? Or did you say, no. Yeah, I can do this?
Well, a little bit of both, but I was like, okay, let's see, you know, for me, it was just like the sailing gives me so much energy and it fires me up. And I was like, okay, the ocean race is the highest goal and I think I will feel epic to do it. So it wasn't a little bit of a no-brainer. I was like, of course, I'm going to try to do this.
Yeah.
So if people said no, I was... Of course, sometimes you feel insecure, but I was like, okay, but I think there is a way. Maybe you don't know yet, but I will try and see how far I can come. Clearly, you didn't, so maybe for me there's a way.
So, yeah. So then you must have been watching the women in the next couple of races. You know, each boat it was mandated. Each boat had to have.
Yeah.
Female sailors, you must have been looking at these guys as kind of role models, I guess, a little bit.
No, actually not. Caroline Brouwer, yes, I think she's a wonderful woman and yeah, I think she's a great sailor, but the others not really. I have not really looked into them, to be honest. I just was like, I do my thing and that's it. And it sounds a bit stupid, but I've never done much research to the other girls. Because I knew if I wanted to get to this goal, I will do it different anyway, because I don't have the background of these girls.
Right. So who are your role models in life generally?
My sister. My sister is a beautiful role model. Yes. I think she's one of the few. My sister. She's a great person and very inspiring and always a good energy. So, yeah.
That's a good answer. I like that. All right, so let's move it on. You're doing plenty of good quality sailing. You're running a Cookson 50, which is kind of mind-boggling. Must have been a fun experience for you.
Yeah,
and you would have been one of the few females running race boats back then.
Yeah. Did,
how was that experience?
Yeah, it was good, actually. I worked for an Australian owner, a female, and actually she sent me to the Caribbean to buy the boat. So we inspected the boat and a surveyor came and we bought the boat. She never saw it. And then I prepared it. And I think Outsider, the TP, was in the same marina. So I worked a lot alongside them to prepare everything. And it was good fun. It was super nice. Yeah. And fun as well, because in Antigua, they were not used to female like captains. So they were always a bit surprised when they saw me with my blonde hairs. And they were like, yeah, so when is the boss coming to pay? Yeah, I'm paying the bill, man. We're like, oh.
That must have been fun, actually, to do that.
Fantastic. Super fun. It's often as well that people, if I come sailing, that they think that I'm the daughter of the owner or something. And then often I just say, yes, I'm the daughter of the owner. And then we start sailing, then they feel very shit because they notice I'm not.
So you have a little fun with it.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the Europe race, which was last year. All happened around the kind of COVID times. Yeah. It was difficult for that race to even to happen. For a little while, it looked like it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But you managed to secure a place on a, well, we could call it a Dutch entry. It was a Axo Nobel, a Dutch company.
Yeah.
But the very much an international crew led by Chris Nicholson.
Yeah.
So you knew Chris from InfoTrack. Did he give you the call on that?
Yeah, actually after InfoTrack, like half a year later, Chris called me and he said we're gonna do like a European tour for activation, for sponsor activation. So I start sailing with the team in 2019. And then we did like 15,000 miles, no less. No, I think like 10 or something. Training and activation around whole Europe. So that's when it started for me with Axo Nobel and Chris and Nathalie. And when the Ocean Race happened, they called me. They called me straight away. I said, okay, Rosie, it's going to happen. Do you want to be on board? I said, sure. Again, yeah.
So that was, did that feel like, oh, I've got a foot on the ladder now. I've, you know, I'm getting close to the real Ocean Race itself. This is a kind of mini version around the.
I think so. Yes. Yeah, I think so. It was very, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people at least would, you know, your name will be associated with the Ocean Race for the first time, which is to me is a big step forward.
Yeah.
In the whole thing. So were you holding out for a spot with Axo Nobel? I think they're still trying to put a campaign together for the race. That was your original plan, was it?
Yes, and actually I worked super closely together with Chris and Nathalie the past 3 years to try to find sponsors, sponsors in the Netherlands as well. And yeah, we worked as a team to find new sponsors. So when I, you know, got the offer here, I called them. And I said as well, oh, this is the opportunity I have. This is what happened. And I'm super keen to sail here. But it feels double because my intention and my heart is where it was the past 3 years. And that's with you. And Chris and Nathalie, they responded the same. They said, Rosie, you should do this. This is an amazing opportunity. And this is a no-brainer. So they said, go and learn as much as possible and follow your heart, follow your dream. And they said, I'm sure we will do a campaign together one day. And I said, okay, let's keep this in mind and move on from there. And I'm on good speaking terms with Nathalie. She's actually a good friend. So, no, they're super happy. And I'm happy that the relationship is so good. Yeah.
That's great. That's great that you can leave it like that.
Yeah.
So on to the campaign now that you're part of. The Axo Nobel campaign was a 65. This is an Imoca 60.
Yeah.
Very different beast.
Yes.
What's your experience of Imoca sailing?
I sailed the first time on an Imoca 1 week ago on
Claire
with Nico Lundven. And that was epic, like super cool. The boats are so different. I'm working here 2 months now, and we're building the boat. And I have a role as a co-skipper, but as well as a boat captain. So we have a boat captain on the shore, and I will be boat captain offshore. So I have a technical role now, and it is crazy how much the boats are different from each other and how much more technical this boat is than any boat I've ever seen. So that is sick. I'm so much looking forward. So the half of July, we're putting the boat in the water. And then we start training. And now we're at the point, today we glue the deck on the hull. So the carbon part is done. We're preparing the boat now.
So it looks like a boat now.
And it's actually very weird because you do everything on Rhino, on like a program for design and drawing. So in there you put your ideas and everything, but now you really can see the boat. So that's very cool. And at this point we're preparing basically the boat to put all the systems like the hydraulics, electronics and everything what you can imagine what's inside a boat. We're installing it, and I will install it with all the specialists. So I know from any department what's happening. And I think that's super cool. Very cool.
So you really do need to know this boat literally inside out, and the best way to do that is to help build it.
Exactly.
Just talk a bit about that boat captain role, because I think it's a bit misunderstood at times. As I understand it, you know, you're responsible for making sure the boat is maintained while you're racing, is at peak performance. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yes, I actually, like, we only sail with 4 sailors, right? And 1 cameraman, Antoine. So because it's such a short crew, everyone kind of needs to do everything, from navigation to trimming to whatever you can imagine. But we decided to have, like, specific, besides that, like a specialization. And for Will Harris, it will be the electronics, more like navigation side. Well, everyone will navigate, but that will be more like his part. And for me, the boat itself. So, the maintenance, I don't know. I hope, well, I know there's a big shore team who will help doing that. But once we go in the ocean, if something breaks, then I'm the one who should solve it. And fix it. And of course, there are 3 others who can give a hand. And luckily, Boris sailed around the world 3 times himself. So I assume he has a lot of knowledge. I will be the one who is the first one to look at it and to try to fix it.
To me, that sounds daunting. To you, how do you feel about that role?
I don't know the word daunting, but...
daunting means it's a scary prospect to have that responsibility.
Oh, yes and no. Yes, because it's a big responsibility. And no, because it's good that someone does it and someone knows the boat from the in and outside. And what's happening often... as well in the 65s for the ocean race, the boat is there, the boat is built, they hire sailors to make the boat fast, and after 9 months or 6 months, the sailors are gone, right? And I think there's so much value in having the sailors building the boat, and I think actually it's more safe like this, because if things are breaking, you need to act so quickly, and... if you installed the system yourselves, like if you did it yourself, you will be able to fix it quicker.
Yeah, and I guess it's like going back to the old days of the race when that's exactly how it was done. They would design boats, build them, the crew would be involved, you know, for years before the race itself.
Yeah, and it's cool as well because, like, I'm here full time now in Van. I live here, and I work with the whole team, so like the boat builders, the designers, the media guys, like everyone who is involved in the boat build, I work with, and I feel very happy to have it like this because I believe that the team is the persons it has inside the team, right? For me, the sailing part is the easy part. I think the hardest part is to build a boat on time, a well-built boat. And we're with 30 people now internally. And I'm super grateful that I get to know all these people because their passion is here and their heart is in here. And if we sail around the world, they will be supporting us. And it's a very stable basis. And I think you need to be here to be part of this basis and to create like a safe environment with the team.
Yeah, it that's a great description of it. It seems to me like you're really enjoying it. Like I can see it.
Yeah.
I can hear it in your voice. I can see it in your eyes. It must be an amazing experience. Is this something you ever dreamed of or set as one of your goals?
No, never. Never. I said in an interview 2 years ago, they asked me, do you want to sail around the world in the ocean race with the 65 on an Imoca? And I said, yeah, but if I have to, if I can choose, of course, in an Imoca. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, I never should have said that because it's so too far. The goal is out of my reach. But yes, here we are. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're going to say no to this, but you must be kind of proud of yourself just based on the conversation we've had over the last 45 minutes or so. You know, you set your stall out to go and do this, and here you are.
Yes, I am kind of proud, but I have to say, when COVID kicked in, I let my goal go. And the fun part is, actually, COVID came and the whole sailing world collapsed, right? Like, there was no sailing, no racing, and there was no perspective as well. And by then I was exhausted and I said to myself, why did I always invest in this world? Why did I give everything and gave up so much socially and in my life to make steps in this world? But from what I can see now, there is no sailing world anymore. So I invested and I gave a lot to become bigger in this world. And the world is not existing and maybe it's never coming back. So in the COVID time, I said, there's one thing that I find important, that's to be happy every day. And no matter what, I just want to be happy. And if I make the ocean race, yes or no, it doesn't matter because I want to win every day. So for me, that it is happening now, it's a present. For me, it's not feeling like I got to my goal because I let my goal go.
Yeah.
I just said, if it's happening, it's a big present. So I feel like I live in, it's a gift. Like it's just a, if this would not have happened, I would have been very happy as well. It's not that this is making me, no, this is extra.
Yeah, I understand. That's a fantastic way of looking at it. Listen, let's just start to round this up. What's the, what does the schedule look like for you now, between now and the start of the race, for you and the team?
It's super
full.
Yes, it is super full. So actually at this point we're putting the GC32, so the Malizia 1, in the water. Actually now I can see it. Next week we have like a sponsor event on the GC. Then, so I'm in Van all the time. We're building the boat, installing all systems. Then in June, we moved our base to Lorient because there we're going to put the mast on. And then the 19th of July at 10 o'clock in the morning, the boat, we will launch it in the water. And remember, it's a German project. So
I was just thinking that sounds very German.
They said, guys, no matter what, no matter what it costs, no matter how heavy, if it will be more heavy, the boat will be in the water by then. So I like this approach. It's another goal. So we will see. Everyone is working their asses off. Then from July, we start training, sea trials, testing, like all the electronics, all the alarms, everything testing. Training in August, September. Then Boris is gonna do the Route de Rhum in November. So then I think I have a holiday. And then we do a training back from Guadeloupe to Europe in November. In December we move to Alicante. And then 15th of January. The race is starting.
Have you allowed yourself yet to start looking ahead to starting the race? I mean, it's been one of your lifetime goals. Have you even thought that far ahead yet?
Yes. So the question, did I start thinking about the race?
Yeah, actually, you know, what it's going to be like to be on the start line, to be setting off on the first leg of the ocean race.
Yes, actually, yes. Yeah, a little bit. Like, and I'm looking forward to it a lot. But now it's good. But I kind of set the whole feeling thing aside because we have so much work to do. And I'm like, better just stay focused, do my job, make sure the boat is ready. And then, But no, of course, sometimes you're in your bed and you're like, oh, you know, it's happening. And especially the press release of 2 days ago, then you start thinking again.
Yeah.
For me, I'm working here 2 months and they only announced it like 2 days ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's... there must be nerves as well, though, right? Excitement, but also nerves. What are you most nervous about
doing the race? Nervous about, if it sounds a bit stupid, but that the boat will break. And like if you compare this boat is 8.5 tons. If you compare it with a 65, what is, I think it's like 12 tons or 13 or something. It's a, you know, I know the 65 will not break. You can sail it around the world and it will not break in two parts. It's super strong and it's heavy. But this boat is designed right on the edge, right? And even we're one of the Imokas who are heavier than others. But I'm so... Well, my nerves are that the boat will break or there will be things happening before the start of the race.
Right.
So that's why I'm just focused and I don't want to think about the race, because I'm like, well, better make sure the boat is ready and in good condition. And if we dock off the 15th of January and we can release the dock lines, then it's a relief for me.
Yeah. I understand. How are you preparing yourself physically for it? Are you in the gym the whole time?
Yes. So we have a physical trainer, Killian. And we go to the gym like 5-6 days a week. On that side is good. And we do a lot of training as well. We sail on different Imokas and on Figaros, for me as well, to get more into the short-handed sailing and to get into the navigation. So, it's different sailing, 65 and this. You sail with 12 people or with 4, and you need to know other things. And so at this point, yes, building the boat is priority, making sure I know the system, that my boat manual is working. Being in the gym and focusing on the short-handed sailing, that's basically the four things I'm focusing on.
That's plenty to focus on.
And my boyfriend should be in there as well.
Well done. Very, very diplomatic. Very diplomatic. Do you see much of him? Is he there with you? Or?
No, I will see him in 2 weeks. He will come over. I haven't seen him for a month. And before that, a month and a half. So we don't see each other much. So that's one thing I would like to change. But yeah, we will work on it. Yes.
Yeah, I diplomatically didn't ask you whether you had time for a relationship, because I know I wouldn't ask a guy that in a podcast interview. So I thought I better not. But you brought it up, so there we go. So we got the answer anyway.
Yes,
Rosie, this has been it's been tremendous fun. I've really enjoyed catching up with you, having this chat. You're an inspiration, I think, to all of us. Anybody who likes the sailing world will love your story. So I hope people enjoy this podcast.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with it all. And hopefully we'll be able to check in again, maybe before the race starts.
Yes.
And have another little catch up. But I look forward to seeing you maybe in Lorient at some point. But for now, Rosie, thanks a million. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Justin. And it's super nice to have a chat with you and share the story. It's relaxed. I'm very relaxed now. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. Huge thanks to Rosalind Kuiper for taking the time to chat with me. And thanks also to all of you for listening and subscribing around the world. I'll be back soon with another great professional sailor interview. Until then, sail fast, everyone.